Maybe my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel at home. I don't know if I'm ever gonna get back again this way. The road's the only place I feel at home. Feel at home.
Hello and welcome to the My Home is on the Road show. My name is Dave Manning. This is the show that comes to you from the, well, from the road. And in this case, from the High Sierras. Got the Volkswagen bus parked not too far from Mammoth Lakes, California, which is near Bishop, California, which is near nothing, really. And I'm parked overlooking a hot spring in a beautiful sage brush valley with the crowning mountains of the Sierra off to the east. And this week we're going to bring you a show that I've been waiting to bring you for quite a while. It's going to be the first of two parts because I got lots of good stuff that I recorded down in Prescott, Arizona with a fellow named Mike Mahaney, who is a excellent piano player, dare I say a virtuoso. And I did a sit-down interview with him in his living room, where he has two beautiful grand pianos sitting on opposite ends of his living room. And Michael, I first met him on a TV show called AM Arizona, and it's a kind of a small town TV show produced in Prescott, and it goes out every weekday morning, an hour long sort of a talk over coffee type format show. And on Fridays they have musicians in, and the very first time that I was on that show, the producer of the show talked to me on the phone beforehand and said, "We're going to pair you up with this other piano player, and we're hoping that at the end of the show you could do a number together." And I wasn't too worried about it. I mostly was concerned that if we were going to do a number together, that meant that I have to bring my keyboard down off the roof of the bus, so it would be more work for me. But as it turned out, the fella that was the other piano player was Michael Mahaney. That was the first time I met him, and we practiced some stuff together for a few minutes and then played it on the air later in the show, and it came off beautifully, actually. And Mike is a guy that's probably in his mid-40s, I would guess. I don't really know. And he's got a nice head of gray hair and a fantastically optimistic and upbeat attitude. He's a really fun guy to be around. He laughs very easily. And he was wearing a shirt and a tie when we were on the TV show, and I was wearing my regular kind of a cowboy shirt and a pair of jeans and my cowboy hat. And so we were kind of an odd couple, but the way we got along musically was fantastic. And usually when I play in Prescott now, he comes by one of the gigs where I'm playing and sits in, and we do a kind of a four-handed piano number, or several of them often, sometimes for half an hour, even 45 minutes during one of my sets. So this week, like I said, we're going to sit down and kind of hear a little bit about Mike Mahaney and how he became, how I transformed from a regular guy from Chicago into a piano virtuoso. And so as this interview begins, we're standing in the living room of his house, which is in a neighborhood kind of away from the rest of Prescott Valley, Arizona, which is kind of the twin city of Prescott, Arizona. And the neighborhood they live is kind of away, like I said, from the other parts of the town. And so it's a whole clump of houses out in a high desert valley where there's a lot of sagebrush. And you can see a whole row of mountains in the distance, which comprises what's called Mingus Mountain. That's in the town of Prescott Valley.
Prescott Valley.
So you're, but it's just a neighborhood kind of off by itself. Whole bunch of houses. What'd you say? There's maybe 100, 200 houses here. Just in the middle of what's a big sagebrush valley.
Right. It's a like chaparral, it's called. You know, it's the vegetation. I mean, and kind of there's mesas that we look at out the window. Basically, we look at about 8 to 10 miles before we get to the Mingus Mountain, which goes up another 2,500 feet.
Yeah, and you've got an amazing living room with two. Tell me about these pianos.
Well, the one that we were playing is a Yamaha C7, a 7 foot, over 7 foot grand piano, ebony grand. And then the other piano is a Steinway B, that's 7 foot grand. It's a 1953. Beautiful. They're both beautiful pianos. So, yeah, we have the two dominating the great room. Yeah, the C7 is for sale.
Okay, yes. So you know, people can get a hold of you if they want to buy a...
That's right.
And you can mail it to them.
Yeah, we'll mail it to you.
A little postage added to that.
Sure.
Yeah. But how did you wind up in this house, in this beautiful, beautiful view?
It was a lot... Oh yeah. Well, first of all, when I bought the house, when I bought the lot that the house is on, it was 24 years ago. So, for the price of, about 20 keys on that piano on the Yamaha C7, that's what I paid for the land.
All right.
Yeah, a very, very low amount of money because it was in the 80s, and actually I was driving the car down. The street behind here, mm-hmm. and I just started coasting, and I said, wherever the car stops, I'm going to buy that lot. It's just one of those ridiculous, things you do. Like, sure enough, the car stopped right there at the behind this lot, and so I wrote down the realty information, called them up, and a few weeks later, bought the lot. So when it came time to build the house, I actually turned the house about 10 degrees east, so that it would have a fantastic view of the mountains.
Yeah.
If I did the kind of the traditional standard thing, the house would be facing the street,
yeah,
and there would be no view of the mountain. There'd be an unobstructed view of an embankment, or of a house next door. So it was kind of fun because when I turned the house that direction, there was an empty lot next door which I didn't own. Mm-hmm. And about 10 years later, it went up for sale, and then I bought it.
Oh, right.
So then I was actually protecting the view that we have now.
Yeah, right on. So, but that is amazing. And you've got a studio where, it seemed, to me it always seemed obvious that you would teach in here. You've got two pianos sitting in one room, but you don't.
No, I don't teach here. There's a additional building, separate freestanding building behind us. The lower level is the garage, and above that is a beautiful studio with 1, 2, 3, 4 keyboards in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy.
We have a lot of keyboards, yeah.
Well, I imagine so.
So as I was setting up the microphones in Mike's living room on one of the two grand pianos there, he started noodling away on the piano, and so I hit record. And it turns out that what he was playing was not a song that he knew at all. It was just something he was making up there on the spot. So we're going to play a little bit of that before we get on to the rest of our conversation with Michael Mahaney.
Thank you.
how would you, if you had to define that structure, what was it? Because I know, like, if I have a song, I know I maybe just have a chord pattern that I'm repeating with my left hand.
It's just a good old, it's a good old 1, 6, 4, 2. And then 1. Issue like top 250 pop songs of all time, and one of them is The Police, Every Move You Make.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll Be Watching You.
Yes, I'll Be Watching You. Yeah.
And Sting
the
says
restraining order song.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sting, and Sting says any song that goes from 1 to 6 is not original. You know, it's like, you know, you know, you know. Okay, well, as soon as I read that, I thought, yes, it is. So my first thought was, it is. It is. It's what you do with it, you know?
Well, yeah. You could say any song that goes from 1 to 4.
Yeah.
Five is the original.
No, you can't do that. So my first thought was, oh, it makes me want to just sit down and make up something original that's 1-6. But is it? I didn't directly think that before I played, but that was just in the atmosphere from the last few days, just sort of in my brain.
You took it as a personal challenge for Sting.
Yeah, I did. Personal challenge for Sting. I like Sting. I like him because I heard him in 83 when I first moved to Prescott Valley, you know, to study classical piano. What's the first thing I did as soon as I got here? I left town with my brother to go hear The Police in Phoenix.
Phoenix, yeah.
Yeah. My teacher was like, "What?" My classical teacher up here, like, "What are you doing? You just got here. You came 2,000 miles from Chicago. Aren't you gonna? Why are you going to Phoenix to hear this pop concert? You know." Anyway, and there he was. There they were. It was incredible. But anyway, this.
You mentioned a bit about coming out from Chicago to study classical piano. I don't know much about your story and how you wound up in PV.
Well, I met a teacher back in Chicago named John Suter. The man was a genius. And he had a studio in Deerfield, Illinois, where I grew up. Mm-hmm. And amazingly, which kind of shows you the power of destiny, I walked by his studio 1,000 times, didn't even know it was there. With all the music going on, with 2 Steinway B's, never heard a note. Then, when I started looking for a teacher, he suddenly materialized. There he was. You know?
Wow.
So I took lessons for him, with him, for a short time after I graduated from college, before I left Deerfield. Just enough to get the, you know, idea of how cool it was. He taught me things like, you know, or I don't know if that's the right melody, you know, impressionism, my first, like, Debussy, you know, piece called The Engulfed Cathedral. He taught me. Yeah, Debussy, a French impressionist, wrote a piece about this this like myth or story that there was this cathedral that was totally submerged in a bog, and every time the full moon would rise, the cathedral would come up out of the water, and the bells would begin ringing.
Wow.
And Debussy wrote a piece about it. So anyway, that was one of the, my first experiences studying with him, was to learn that piece.
Can we hear some of it? It's in there. It's in there.
This is when the cathedral comes up.
Extraordinarily dramatic.
Oh yeah, and that's the portion where the cathedral actually comes up out of the from the depths.
So you learn. I mean, that's a very different style of piano than you know you and I have played together. When we played together. You weren't doing that at the Raven Cafe.
They ought to. But anyway, no. That's it. That's kind of an interesting thing for me. I mean, I've covered a lot of musical, you know, terrain.
So you learned from was it John Suter?
Yeah, John Suter, and then he moved here.
Oh, I see.
I was living in Lawrence, Kansas, selling medical supplies after college, my first job. He meanwhile moved to Prescott Valley, and I'll never forget. I got a letter from him, dear Michael. You'll probably think I lost my mind, but I've just moved to Prescott Valley, Arizona. And I was like, Prescott Valley, Arizona. Where is that? What is that? So basically, he moved here in 82, I think, and then I came in 83, and I started studying with him. When I say started studying with him, I lived, breathed, ate, you know, everything was a classical piano for 8 years.
Holy cow.
That's all I did. All my friends were, you know, getting married and, you know, establishing their careers, et cetera, et cetera. I was learning how to play piano. So I was 24 years old when I moved here, from ages 24 to 31. That's what I did. I taught lessons, and I studied, and I practiced. I practiced at least 4 hours a day, sometimes 6 hours a day. And I would teach, you know, 5 days a week, and I would have lessons with Mr. Suter as often as possible, you know, several times a week.
Wow. Yeah. That's really intense.
Yeah, it was boot camp.
Well, boot camp only lasts for 6 weeks or something. You're like in boot prison.
Yeah, it was like a life sentence. Life sentence. And he died, and that's how it ended. He died. Wow. When I started studying with him, he was in his 70s. So I got the you know, like the cream right off the top. He had taught for 50 years before he gave me a lesson. I've taught for 26 right now, and I can do things with students now that I couldn't even think of a year ago. Couldn't even think of them. They're like beyond my intellect. Now, the things I do every day, well, at that rate of acceleration, he was teaching me after 50 years. So I was getting like the distillate of the distillate of the distillate of the distillate of the distillate, just like the essence of absolutely what you have to know to play.
Wow.
Yeah, and Chopin, I studied with him. Bach, Beethoven, really how to play, like how to put the key down. We would do this for 2 hours, what I'm doing right now.
Just kind of slowly running your finger over the key.
Just looking at techniques, or super firm hand, a lot of tension, and then put the key down very slowly to produce different textures. He was like a painter Who taught piano?
Wow. Yeah, because, I mean, I always tell people the piano is like the typewriter of musical instruments, but it's more than just...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't really even think too much about how you push a key down other than how hard you push
it. And that was his specialty. That's what he did. So, like the French Impressionists, he was like a genius with that. Like how much arm weight, what velocity does the key go down? And the whole palette. He would talk about your palette. Michael, your palette's inappropriate for this piece. You're playing Chopin palette, but this is a Russian piece. I need the colors need to be more intense. I need more more darkness. You need more. Took a long time to learn how to do that. That's what I call 231 fingering. You wrap your third finger in your second and first, and then all the arm mass goes into the key. And this key goes down about three times faster than these two, so it shifts the proportion of the sound up toward the top, so it brightens the top, and it creates the illusion that the sound is much larger. See, as opposed to just...
Stop scaring the radio.
That's a little. Yeah. So he was a little scary as a teacher. You know what I mean? Because he expected. Well, this would happen a lot. Okay, this would happen a lot. I'll start playing a piece. You'll be John Suter.
Okay.
As soon as I start, you have to stop me.
Okay.
You have to tell me it's all inappropriate, it's wrong. Okay, as soon as I start.
No. Stop, stop. That's completely wrong.
That's it. That's what he would do. He wouldn't be polite and wait till you played your piece through. Often at his workshops, someone would start playing. No, 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 you can't. That's wrong. Let me see your hands. What are you... Oh, of course. You're not... There, that's better. That's better. All right. Thank you. You'd always say, thank you, when you did it right. I'd say, thank you.
So he inspires you. Yeah. Apparently by yelling at you like that.
Yeah.
And thanking you.
Yeah, you're right.
He inspired you to want to teach piano.
Yeah, actually, he gave me my first student. He had a...
Was it his worst one?
Yeah, it was his worst nightmare. Was my dream come true. It was. A 13-year-old girl, 12-year-old, I can't remember. And he said, Michael, I've tried everything with her. I'm too old for this. Would you like to teach her? She could be your first student. Why don't you teach her? Sure. Okay. So I went to I had a lesson. They came to my house. And I'm just telling her about how to play the piano for 30 minutes, having fun. And at the end of the 30 minutes, the mother looked at me and said, Mr. Mahaney, with her checkbook in hand, how much do I owe you? And I began to hear, you can pay me whatever you want. And I was like, are you kidding me? You're asking me how much to pay me for what I just did? I was used to jobs being jobs, not passion, fun, excitement, you know, creative outlet constantly. And that's all I was doing, is just showing her how to play better. So she was my first student. Her name was Gina Ray. Gina Ray Kiggins. Kiggins. She's probably a famous, you know.
Not that name.
Anyway, so yeah, that's how it started. So yeah, he sent me one, and then next thing I had two, and you know, now I do about 40 a week, 40 lessons a week.
Wow. So that's... Yeah, that would at least be like a full-time job, because imagine, you know, even if it's a half-hour lesson, you probably spend, by the time you get there and everything, spending an hour doing it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, but I do have hour lessons, so they take 2 hours. But I mean, no, it's part of what I do, but then, of course, you know, performing. I enjoy performing.
All right, that's where we're going to leave things off for this week. If you want to get in touch with Michael Mahaney, either to buy that Yamaha grand piano that he has for sale, or if you're interested in lessons, the interesting thing is Michael is actually starting to give lessons over the internet. He's had a few students that have moved away from the area but wanted to continue taking lessons from Michael. So he's in the midst of kind of getting set up where he can kind of give video lessons over the internet. So you might be able to convince him to give you lessons from up in Alaska. So if you want to get a hold of Michael Mahaney, let me give you the email. It's MahaneyPianoArts@AOL.com. And Mahaney is spelled M-A-H-A-N-Y. So it's MahaneyPianoArts@AOL.com. If you want to give him a direct phone call, number is 928-772-8627. And I'll repeat that in just a few minutes. But I want to give a big thank you also to Groundswell Media Productions. They're the folks that keep DaveManning.net up and running. And DaveManning.net is where you can find out more about me, my music, my travels, and also where you can listen to any of the My Home is on the Road shows archived there. And I want to give a big thank you, of course, to Nathan, who put together the website. And but I got to say, you know, he was kind of critical the first time he heard me play the piano.
No, 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 you can't. That's wrong, wrong. Let me see your hands. What are you? Oh, of course. You're not.
That's better. That's better. Right. Thank you.
All right. Safe travels. Have yourself a fantastic day. Let me give you Mike's information one more time before we get out of here. MahaneyPianoArts@AOL.com. Mahaney spelled M-A-H-A-N-Y. Phone direct 928-772-8627. My name's Dave Manning. Once again, safe travels and have yourself a fantastic day.
Well, my home's on the road. The road's the only place I feel home. And I don't know if I'm ever gonna get back again this way. The road's the only place I feel home.